coffee stay black, just like me. Don't need no sugar, don't need no cream.
What up? Welcome back to the Coffee Black Podcast. A lot of things have happened. It's your boy Bartholomew Jones over here with the wifey roaster, most notable roaster,
Renata Henderson.
You know what I'm saying? In the globe. New location. How y'all feel about this? Let us know if you're watching the video. Fun things will be happening in the background.
Can we make a disclaimer?
For sure.
I've had 15 people ask me if we're still open.
Yep. We open.
We are still open.
Yep.
I mean, we can't go into like our marketing funnels, but
yeah, for sure. For sure. The anti-gentrification coffee club is still open.
My own mama was asking me if we're still serving.
We're not closed yet, but we are closing. So don't sleep. You got like 4 months left. It's the end of an era. Really excited about the new location. Let's catch the people up. If somehow you missed all the moments on social media, or if you're new to the Coffee Black multiverse, like we're going to catch you up. So we are Coffee Black.
Oh, are we going that far?
Maybe we should go that far back. That far black.
Oh,
stay
my
woke, my
gosh.
Brother.
Oh, gosh. Help us.
No sugar, no cream. Okay, but no, for real, it's been a lot going on in the Coffee Black world. We won last year, 2023, or really 2021, we went to Africa for the first time to start building the all-black supply chain. It's the first one ever established between Ethiopia and Memphis, which was amazing. Then we did a documentary soundtrack about that with the homies at the Coffee Club that won Best Film in Coffee.
Last year.
Yeah, my wife went the next year to learn how to roast in Ethiopia, learn from indigenous women there, and then she came back and she was the first black female roaster in Memphis ever, and it's Women's History Month, so we definitely want to shout that out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's March.
Yeah. Come on, it's March. You know what I'm saying? Like, black women are the oldest roaster class on the planet. They've been doing this, you feel me? And we're really excited to be able to start sharing that culture back with this side of the world. Because I think it's important, you know what I'm saying, to honor the work that black women have given to the world. It's really like two Black History Month. Like, this month is Women's History Month, but for me, it's especially Black History.
It's like black
Women's
future.
History Month.
We always say Black Future Month.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And so, yeah, it's been crazy, man, just going through that journey. And most recently, we went to Ethiopia and Rwanda, took 8 black Americans with us to learn about pre-colonial coffee culture. We haven't actually really debriefed that.
No, not at all.
But that was amazing, too. Do you want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah, we had a very rigorous application process across the states, across the country. And, I mean, great qualified baristas from... So many spaces where we've met people who we look up to and admire. And, you know, we had the process. We got a chance to interview and really hear the heart of some of the people who wanted to come and partake. And so we chose 4. It was a rough conversation. Like, it was just tough to chisel down with so much with the talent we had. And so, yeah, we landed on 4, and we took those 4 to Rwanda, Ethiopia with us this last year.
Yep.
We did some skill share, we did some culture share, we did some love share. It was just great. It was so good to just connect with our people, with our own people, without having to get, you know, permission to be. So we were just like able to be in these spaces and be nerds, but also not talk about coffee and talk about blackness and talk about grief and talk about, you know, pain and talk about love. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so that was a 2-week process.
But talk about what happened at the beginning, though, like of the trip, first day of the trip in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Something kind of incredible happened that we haven't talked about publicly.
We haven't. So we're debriefing. I didn't know if it was like a...
I mean, since we're telling people what's been going on, we might as well
tell what's going on. Okay, so I have to say rewind then. So rewind. So the first day, we touched down in Ethiopia. Jet lag was real. And so we get to our hotel. We get all settled in. Mm. And then our driver's like, okay, we got to go. Mm. So we leave and we go to, what did they call it? Ramada. Yeah. Ramada.
Yeah, it was the Ramada Hotel. Ramada Hotel.
And so, you know, we're outside. They have a nice little patio to wait on before you go into the hotel. Mm. And we're outside. And we knew that this was the point that we were supposed to experience some ceremony. Yep. That we had known about previously, that we didn't know a lot of details about it,
for
but
sure.
It was just little, you know, little glimpses of what it could actually be.
Yeah.
What in a 30-second
okay.
Recount, like recap, what in your studies over the years did you kind of understand about Bunakala? And then I'll kind of go back to what we saw of it.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think this frames why we wanted to go to Africa anyway. Because people assume Africa is just resources and you have to take them somewhere else to know what to do with them. But the reality is Africans were the first people to also use these resources, right? And to understand them. And coffee is included in that list. And so coffee culture is not just what Italy added to the cipher with espresso, or France with croissants, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, pour overs that came from Japan, you know what I'm saying? But there's a whole history and culture in coffee that is pre-colonial that has been largely either ignored or unobserved or undervalued, or but mostly dishonored. You know what I'm saying? There's a whole root that has never really received its due honor. And that is, ironically, when we went to Africa the first time, that was what was the most healing and what I had the most synergy with and what I had the most connection to. And just the brief interactions I had learning about Bunaf Nagea Hendabina, this 2,000-year-old blessing, may your house lack no coffee nor peace. Like, that whole experience was like, yo, wait, what? And then people jokingly calling me a Bagada because I'm big and I'm black and I be wearing hats. You know what I'm saying? Like, wait, what? What's that? Oh, it's like a king? And then somebody corrected me on TikTok. Nah, it's not a king. It's more like a democratically elected priest. I was like, all right, that's fire. But then it was like, it's also kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Like, big coffee OG as well. I don't know. It's all these things kind of rolled in one. And I was like, I want to experience that. And so I read a bunch of peer-reviewed articles, and Ture YG from Suco Coffee sent me some books to read, but like still could only approximate information because I'm reading some, you know, academic collegiate grad students' observation about this junt versus it's like trying to read about what a cipher is versus being in a cipher. It's like totally different ways of like gaining information. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we wanted to go. Long story short, we had the opportunity to meet all the Abadi.
Wait, my fault.
No, so
fast forward.
Okay, rewind it.
I have to say fast
take that.
Forward.
Rewind it back. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
So we're at the Ramada.
Okay.
Hotel. Yeah. And so we're sitting on this patio, and coming up the street, after we have been sitting there for like 5 minutes, we see coming up the street out of this car, we're just these very well-dressed elder men just walking, looking
in
like
procession.
Looking like royalty coming down the street. Yeah. Like people who were walking down the street like went on the other side of the street out of respect, you know?
Yeah.
And so like we were like, oh, that must be them. The them being the Abagadas that you have been getting that experience or like kind of like the background information about.
Yeah, I had never actually met one.
Yeah,
before.
He had met an Abagada.
Yeah.
And so these guys come in and we're just like, oh my gosh, you know, we're just like greeting them or whatever. And then after them comes in another processional of these women.
Mm.
And like, they're looking like straight up like queens.
Yeah.
These mug, like,
yeah.
And we were, I was physically shaking when they came up because I was like, I have no idea. Like, I don't even know how to respect somebody as much as they deserve to be respected. Outside of like my grandma, you know?
Right. How do you really honor someone? Yo, what's the language for that? What's the appropriate?
I think coming from Western society, it's hard to define. You know, it's hard to define what that even means to honor to honor those women. And so, you know, we're there, and they were so like just forthcoming and just like they came and shook every one of our hands and greeted us and hugged us. And so they're the Adesinke, and a little bit more about that as we get more into the ceremony. But like we just basically basically float, you know, in the cartoons when they smell something just float on the fragrance. We're just like floating into the hotel on excitement, you know. And so we go in and we go into this room and they start explaining to us the ceremony, the 2,000-year-old ceremony called Bunakala.
Yeah.
And so Bunakala, which means
coffee slaughter.
Coffee slaughter.
So when you hear Bunaf Nage Hendabina
Buna.
Buna, that means coffee. And this particular piece is a part of the Oromo culture, which is a ethnic group, one of the biggest ethnic groups in Ethiopia. They live in the southern region of Ethiopia and Kenya as well. They're in Kenya too. Really fascinating.
Yeah. So they start explaining that to us and they're telling us how first they tell us the history of coffee and how basically, I don't remember the name that they used for God.
Wa'ak.
Wa'ak. And so they tell a story about Wa'ak.
It means the big black god.
The big black god, Wa'ak, who creates this man and this man. I mean, it's essentially the creation story.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. He creates this man and the man sins against him. And when the man said, this is a very condensed version. And when the man sins against him, it grieves him. And he cries. And the tears that he cries, of course, are the rains that create the fertile ground that breed and nurture the coffee plant.
Yep.
And so they believe that coffee is physically grown from the tears.
It's a divine plant.
It's divine.
It's contrasted against all the other plants in the world, which grow from rain, but coffee grew from the tears of God.
Yeah.
So it's already different in contrast to every other agricultural crop. And so then it's interesting too, because that man died because of his disobedience to the creator, and those tears brought new life out of his death, which, you know, for our faith practice is so much synergy there to be wow, this is some real ancestral information that has translated. It's just crazy to think about it. And so it's ontologically almost foundational to human belief and cosmology. So just thinking about that, and then for us to see the first coffee brewing practice that came out of that, which is Bunakala, right? It predates the Jebina, it predates the espresso machine, it predates a pour over, it predates the Mr. Coffee. This is the first one on the planet that humans did.
Yeah.
And to get to see and observe that was wild, from the generational stewards of this recipe, basically.
Yeah,
no. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of crazy. And then the other part is all of them showed up.
All of them showed up. It was a 8 hour?
Yeah, drive from the countryside.
Yeah.
And they all showed up to meet us in this coalition. At that point, we had 2 + 4 = 6. We had 7 black Americans with us, including the Zaire, who was shooting the film. Which, by the way, documentary coming out soon. We're debuting it over at in Chicago for SCA this year. So tap in with us if you want to see that. But it was kind of crazy to think about that. And then for us to get to actually meet all of them, it's very rare that they all kind of congregate like this, unless it's you know what I'm saying? All the different regions of Oromia all pulled up, with the Adesinkes and the Abagadais, as well as journalists and scholars and, you know what I'm saying, cultural ambassadors, musicians. Shout out to Shasha Entertainment.
Shasha Entertainment.
You know what I'm saying? It was crazy. We used to hear Shasha
first soundtrack too. She had us plugging and we loved it. They let it was live. So he's explaining Abagada, getting into the Adesinke and the title and the authority that comes with that was so. I remember Lanisa, shout out Barista Life LA.
Barista Life LA, homie.
Uh-huh. I knew he was gonna say that. That's why I took such a long inhale.
I appreciate you saying that.
I was let me, okay.
LA.
But I just remember her talking about, so let me not get ahead of myself. So we find out the Adesinke are also elected elected in a way. So within their regions, they are they almost inherit this position.
Yeah.
And so they're given this position from a woman who also is an Adesinke, and the authority comes in their position in their own small society or region, in that they speak up for the homeless. Oh, gosh, I need a nap.
Nah, but I was thinking
voiceless.
Voiceless, yeah. Come on. But it's,
they speak up for the voiceless. They are considered a religious leader. So the Abagadais actually follow the Arasinkes mm-hmm. as far as religious types of
insight.
You know
what I'm saying? What's with discernment?
Discernment. So yeah. like these things that as a black woman, I know I have these qualities and things like that. But
you
like
have these notes,
I have these notes. Mm-hmm. And I think it has gotten boiled down to just the in Western culture, if I had to put it in context, it's gotten boiled down to this descriptor of like strong black woman.
Yeah.
But I think back to Lanisa, when we were hearing all of the things that an Arasinke can do, and they have this big stick called Arasinke.
Yeah.
And it's a stick. It's a stick of justice.
Yeah.
And the things that can be enforced and implemented when this stick is available, like when yeah. it's present. It kind of just shows the authority that these ladies walk with. And so me and Lanisa were like kind of tripping because we were like, as black women, like we know this is in us. Mm. We got disconnected from, yeah, from the root of it.
Yep.
And so we didn't get to experience these women who basically, when you pass down being an Arasinke to the next, you pass down the Sinke, pass the stick, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's amazing because you're literally passing on your authority to the next person who's going to take up your role in your community.
Wow.
And in your family. And so I was so inspired by that to see them. And they're the ones who carry out the actual ceremony. Mm. And they had and it reminded me almost like of a type of discipleship because they had a younger girl who was there who was unmarried. So if you're in Arasinke, you're generally married.
Yep.
I won't say older.
You're like married with kids.
Married with children.
Kids are probably grown. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And so they had a younger lady who was there who they were basically training in the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can go into the details of the ceremony, but it just was, for me, just kind of as an end note on the Arasinkes themselves.
Mm.
I started doing so much more research and just looking into and doing some contrast of like, what are they precisely? Like, what exactly does it mean to be an Arasinke? But also, like, contextually, what does it mean for me to be an Arasinke? So at the end,
that part.
At the end of the ceremony, which again, we'll get back into that, but they came to both of us and said, we have something for you. And they pulled out two chairs and asked us to sit down.
Mm.
And so they robe us. You know, they start wrapping the scarf and they give me
the clothes we saw the Abagadais and Arasinkes in when they like processed into they're like, yeah, we got one for you.
They had one for us. They had the headdress and the jewelry for the bracelets and all of this. And I wasn't expecting. Were you expecting that?
Nah. I was still bugging that they actually showed up. Like, I thought it was gonna be like a representative being like, yo, this is our elders' practice.
And just maybe show pictures or like descriptions or something. But so neither of us, we were sitting there literally just taking it all in and they were like, come.
Yeah.
And like, we want to share this. And that was, I don't know, like, I still don't have words for it.
And
like,
it
even
was
if you look at the footage,
yeah.
I'm like still chewing the part, like the coffee from the ceremony, the Buna. And I'm sitting here and it's just not gelling in my mind yet that what is happening is happening.
Yeah.
I'm legit.
And because, like, just in case you didn't get context, not only did they give us the clothes as a gift, but they also gave us the title.
They bestowed.
They were like, yo, you are Bart or Maurice. You are an Abagada. Renata, you are an Arasinke now. It's your job to be cultural emissaries for what we've shown you today.
Emissary, that's
you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like a cultural steward of what we've shown you today.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is your title now. And I'm like, hold up. It's only like 9 Abagadais or so. Somebody quote me in the comments. In the whole country. And they're like, you're number 10? Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's only so many Arasinkes. Like, oh, you're the Memphis Arasinke, you know, the U.S. Arasinke. I don't. It felt like we just became Green Lanterns or something. I was just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, is there a manual? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's low-key like Kyle Rayner. You know what I'm saying? Because he became a Green Lantern with no context. So it's like we had context though.
I was like, don't go too far in that analogy.
For sure. I'm just saying we got the green screen, so interesting things can happen behind me right now. Tom, do your thing, my friend.
I was like, don't go too far. You might lose.
In brightest day. In darkest
honey,
night.
Honey, you're going deeper. Huh,
no sugar or cream shall escape my sight. You know what I'm saying? Let those who worship. Folgers might. Beware my power. Coffee. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, bro. I had to get that off. But like, I think that it was really crazy to think about and to experience. And, like, we'll talk more about this in the film if you want to watch it. To, like, hear about what that experience is. See the Bagadas, the Adesinkes. We had so many other, like, crazy life-changing experiences. But, like, just that for you and me. Like, we haven't really had time to sit down and be like...
But, like I said, I still don't... I don't have words for it.
Yeah.
Like... I think...
And can I ask you a question? Like, are you kind of scared to even say that is what you are?
I haven't said it.
Yeah, it's like, this is our first time saying it on the mic because it's like...
I have not said it. It's, I think, and I don't know why I feel like, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the coffee or I just feel like it's almost like a weight. And not a bad weight, but just like, you know, when your mama, when you were in high school, your mama told you to take out the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
So she could cook it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take it out.
Yep.
You heard the door close.
Yep. That feeling.
Yeah. That weight that comes with that. You know, you're not going to die from it or something, but you know. Oh, yeah, Lord. Yeah. And so, like, for me, the weight, you know, the weight of it, I think the only thing I can compare it to is when I got baptized was, like, understanding what I was committing to and, like, not really understanding what I was committing to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I understood it in my spirit. I understood it. I think logically I didn't understand it.
And also it was almost like I have so much respect and honor for the goddess system and, like, the Oromo culture that we've been introduced to and all the other cultures in Ethiopia as well and, like, the cultures of indigenous people, period, in Africa and beyond. But, like, this is the one I've studied and been blessed by and encouraged by and directly rooted to the most, connected to. So then to meet these people, to me, was like, for instance, we got nominated 2024's Most Notable Roasters globally. And that was, like, crazy excitement. This was a way bigger deal to meet the Abagadas to me. It was a way bigger deal for me to be like, I'm meeting these people who have maintained and the practices that I feel like fully embody my humanity's potential with this crop that I have never been able to actually see modeled out in front of me because everything we've ever seen has been colonial.
Because, you know what I'm saying? For me, so I'm appreciative of the global most notable
They're
global
not, roaster. That's crazy. We finna get into
but
that.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
We cannot pass most global notable roaster on to our children.
Yeah, for sure.
I think...
That's determined by some nameless, faceless group of
which, and we're
voters.
Grateful for you, whoever
for sure.
you
Shout
may
out
be.
To all y'all who voted.
And thank y'all. People you know stay
what
telling
saying?
Us.
Get like, my
people stay telling
thank
us,
you,
like,
bro.
We voted for y'all. Thank yeah, y'all. No, okay, crazy. Don't hear that.
That was a crazy moment.
But I think what I'm hearing, or what I felt is... Man, the authority that was literally bestowed upon us is something that we can literally pass on to
and
our
it's
children.
And different
you know?
Than, like, what we received with the Most Notable Global Roaster Award was recognition. What we received by being given the title of Bagada and Adesinke was an inheritance. You know what I'm saying? And there's a big difference between a heritage, an inheritance, and then a recognition of those things.
Absolutely.
So it's honestly kind of powerful that we received this in this small room in Addis Ababa and the Ramada from
the Ramada,
you know what I'm saying? From these group of amazing elders, we received this blessing, right? Almost like, you know, think about Abraham bestowing a blessing on Isaac, you know what I'm saying? Like, we received this blessing, and then after receiving that blessing, we then got recognized globally by the industry in the world, right? So it's almost like they somehow knew, because we haven't really talked about it, but they knew in some way that there was like a shift in like authority. There was a shift in like, what is the next wave? What's the next wave that's coming
forward? So what, let me go even deeper than that. Like, when you say authority, what do you mean by that? Like,
well, I think about
this industry.
You know,
or
I was
in, I don't know.
Yeah, I was just in Nashville for we did the Grizzlies game with the homies at Unapologetic here in Memphis. Shout out to Unapologetic. Shout out to the Grizzlies. You know what I'm saying? Big teams coming, and we then went. I went to Nashville to meet with the Nashville Black Assembly and the Southern Movement Code, which is a really dope group of people who we've been getting to know over the last year, looking to build power among Black communities across Tennessee. Which to me is also a strange kind of like new heritage I'm walking into. You know, it's like patterns, right? Because I always said I'm from Memphis. I'm not from Tennessee.
Nobody be thinking about
Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wore the camo jacket. I've been trying to embrace the Tennessee culture more. You know what I'm saying? But we got the green screen. But like, we up in Nashville with the homies. We in Nashville with the homies, and they're doing their first Black Nashville. About, what's up?
The camo jacket is embracing Tennessee culture.
I'm suddenly, bro.
We definitely just walked right.
Bro, because when I was being from Memphis, right? When I think about Tennessee, I think about the Volunteers and camo jackets, bro.
And Texas.
You know what I'm saying?
Somehow you think about Texas.
Somehow I think about Texas. You know what I'm saying? I think about, because like, what did Tennessee volunteer for, bro? Why were we named the Volunteers?
Oh, man.
Because we volunteered. We had the most volunteers for a war. Guess which war? Yes, bro. I can't embrace that. Like, that's wild.
How many volunteered? That's the best.
I'm saying y'all wanted to go. They didn't have to draft y'all. You know what I'm saying? Y'all was, let's get them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't rock with that. That doesn't you know, tickle my fancy. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, I wasn't into that. But there's a whole other side of Tennessee that I strongly identifies with the notes that Memphis has, like the even the music, the literal notes we make, right? We talk about coffee having unique notes, but like cultures have notes. And I think synergizing the notes of the ground and the crop with the also like the culture of the people who are rooted in that ground is important. And so like people love Tennessee's products. They love the black Tennessee's products. You know what I'm saying? Whether we talking about soul music, whether we talking about creativity, food, whether we talking about music.
Just put soul in front of everything.
Soul, period. You know what I'm saying? But then when it comes time for the state's identity, it's almost like, well, you can't get it out of Memphis, so we're just going to erase that and make it a separate thing. And then I began to identify with that and be like, well, I'm not from Tennessee. I literally am from Tennessee. It's on my ID, but I let that identity be colonized and someone else write my narrative for me. So it's been very, like, in a smaller way, but in a dope way to follow this other pattern. Yeah.
I'm
going to let y'all know some cloth talk. So when we did the press release for the most global notable roaster, I was intentional about saying and being proud of saying we did this and we're the first people from Tennessee to do this. You know what I'm saying? Which you have never heard me be like, I'm the first person. We've done a lot of firsts in Tennessee, but I never really felt like I could claim that part of my identity. And so I had a test. I wanted to see how people would react if we publicly identified as being proud to do something from Memphis and from Tennessee, in addition to our like racial and ethnic heritage. And like so many people identify with like a lot of the struggles that we have, that I think in a lot of ways, blackness is a key to liberation for all other sorts of communities, including like whatever it means to be from a state like Tennessee. And the successes that we experience are encouraging and inspirational for other communities. And like being able to say that we're a part of this community, you know, and being able to embrace that and to celebrate that and to be celebrated for that was honestly a really healing experience for me. So we're in Nashville with the Southern Movement Coalition and Nashville Black Assembly. And we're talking about, you know, we're talking about what's happening in the state. We're talking about what's happening with us. And like, for me to be in that position was just like very interesting. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was very healing to be able to like have that experience in Tennessee and then to be able to share that with a group of people who are doing it. And so to kind of connect back to where we're going, you're saying, what does it mean to have power in that conversation? They basically translated this Huey P. Newton quote, which is like basically power is the ability to identify phenomena and then to make that phenomena occur in reality. And so it's like basically the ability to name something and then to make that thing operate under the identity and name you gave it, right? And so, or to name a change or a desire and then to make that thing come into reality. And so like when you think about what Coffee Black has done over the last 4 years, we started out with this question of what would it look like if? What would it look like if coffee had always been black? What would it look like if the indigenous people of Africa had introduced coffee to the indigenous people of the Americas and the rest of the world too, versus colonialism? What would it look like to truly make coffee black again, which was a question at the end of the documentary? We asked these questions And then we actually answered them. Yeah. Like, that's the crazy part to me. And that's when I talk about authority, is like the first thing that Yahweh gave Adam was the role.
I was just about to go there.
Come on. Yeah.
Of
naming things. Right. Yeah. And that's powerful. And even from my praxis.
Because you can only name something.
Yeah.
If you have the power to name it.
Come on. Yeah.
So like we name our sons. Mm-hmm. We named our sons because they are from us.
Yep.
And so the authority was given to us to steward mm-hmm. them. And there's a name and there's an identity. Because it's more than just a name. It's the full package.
It's the identity associated yeah. with it. And so you think about our trip to Ethiopia, we kept getting named. Like, I received the name, jokingly, Abagada, receiving the name, Abba Jafar, you receiving a name. G2, you receiving a name.
G2 was funny.
Yeah.
G2 fertile, means, you know, fertile. Saying?
Green.
Fertile. And every time I told somebody my name, they were like,
You know what I'm saying?
And then I showed them a picture of my children. So
like, yeah, we got three kids. And then you go to Rwanda and you get named Uwachu, which is our own. And then I get named Shema, which is proud. And then we get received like this final set of names, you know, almost like a poke evolution. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, this is the Charizard form. This, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yo, Abagada Adesinke. And like, to like, the crazy part is, a part of the reason why I haven't felt comfortable like identifying, part of it is because I don't want to feel like I'm culturally appropriating, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But like, being in a position where all the elders of that community came and gave us the name, it almost feels disrespectful not to use it. But a part of the reason why I feel this weird dissonance is because I feel like I have to earn a name, like it's a title, right? Like you earn the right to be a congressman. You earn the right to be, you know, team captain or whatever. But like, this is not a title. This is a name in a lot of ways, even though it is a name that functions as like a role. They're like, you're already doing this. Therefore, you already are this. And we're just identifying it for you and ritualizing the naming of it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But like, we're seeing it because you're already doing the work that this role is. You already are that. You know what I'm saying? And so like, that's a different way to think about naming. And honestly, it's a more indigenous way to think about naming. Even when I think about what I know about Native American culture here, is like a lot of times people would receive names after they have lived life for a while. And people are saying, oh, you do this, so this is your name. Mm. Versus this is your name, so go figure out how to do this. You know, and I think that's what we experienced, was like an observation of our elders and our cousins on the continent saying, this is what you are doing. So therefore, this is what you are, because someone who does this is a this. Like, a baller is a person who balls. You know what I'm saying? So like, an Abagada is a person who Abba's the Gada. You're a father of the Gada system. An Adesinke is someone who's a Sinke to the Ade or the Gada. Like, you're a mother. I think that's what Sinke means. We got to do more research. But like, Sinke is the stick, actually.
Yes.
So that's crazy. Yeah. So you're the power of the Gada system. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To think about, you always have been a person who is like, when you get fired up about injustice, and
absolutely.
You, like that time you almost snapped on a police officer.
No, I did. He was in the
I'm like, we are black.
If you're out there today, you were still wrong.
I was like, babe, we're.
He was like, that's a police officer. I was like, he's a human first.
For sure.
I'm going to go off on this human
yes.
who happens to be a police.
She was so upset, y'all, and was ready to really just let it off. And I'm like, that man. We just, come on, bruh. We in Memphis.
It was a black police officer.
We in Memphis.
That's true.
Tyree Nichols, like, that's we true. Go in there, like, we know this is real.
Yeah.
But, like, you've always been fearless to speak out for people who are voiceless. And so, and I've always been willing to sacrifice like a father would in order to provide equity and flourishing for, and that's just a part of my inheritance from my parents and my mother, and like your inheritance from your parents, your mother, your father, our grandparents, we talk yeah. about your,
and
you
I
know
think
what
that
I'm saying?
Was the powerful part about it too, honey, was like looking at those women.
Yeah.
And not, I'm not finna cry.
Okay.
I am, but looking at those men and women and seeing my grandfather and yeah. seeing my grandmother.
In an uncolonized state.
And those I feel like those titles, even like
yeah.
and the air that they carry
yeah.
represented so much and still do for my grandmother, who's still alive, like represents so much of what she's lived for
yeah.
and what my granddaddy lived for.
Yeah.
And like seeing them there, there was a familiar element to hearing like the weight that they carry in their community, and it was like, that's my grandma, you know, yeah. like, that's my granddaddy, that's my mama, yeah. you know, like,
yeah.
and not in like a, you know, you're trying to find something, but it's like, that's our, that is our inheritance.
Right.
Like, and you, we yeah. get to carry that.
You see the shared root, you know, that's there. And I think that in a lot of ways, you get to see, like, almost when a fruit is disconnected from its root, it almost starts to take on the identity and the characteristics of the new environment that it's in. And in a lot of ways, that can be dope because that's a new thing. And when I think about what coffee has become around the world, there are dope new things. But there's also kind of a loss there as well of, like, yeah. some of those main core characteristics, and if you're not able to kind of reference that, you are in danger in some ways of losing it. And I think the power of returning to the motherland, and why I think everyone who's in this industry needs to be consistently learning from our cousins at the root, right? Whether you're honestly outside of this industry, as humans, it's important for us to constantly be learning from our root in Africa and from our indigenous roots around the world, is because that is where we see what the mother tree actually is. Mm-hmm. And that's where you learn the key characteristics and defining qualities to keep us from straying too far, even as we grow and adapt. Like, you don't want to become something else. You don't want to be a mutant. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to be, like, you know what I'm saying? An abomination. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to be like, yo, this don't even have no nutritional value no more. Mm-hmm. It's changed so much. And I think there's a way to change in alignment, and then there's a way to change that's simply reacting to trauma in our environment. And that is where you almost produce, like, seedless fruit. You know what I'm saying? Which is a whole other conversation. But, like, coffee is the seed of an African fruit. And the nutritional value is so dense in this thing, when we talked about it with Vanderbilt, is because of the fact that it's a seed. And a plant stores the highest nutritional potency mm-hmm. inside of a seed. Okay. And so, like, the crazy part now, like, even, like, I've been on watermelon heavy. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry. I'm guessing.
Yeah, and when we did the bars with the Southern Movement Coalition, I was like, water bending, water milling on my seeds in line. You know what I'm saying? And thinking about, like, the importance of having access to our seed and being able to, even in farming, to appropriately place them so they can produce more fruit. Like, part of the issue that we're seeing, it was a phenomenon last year, but people were identifying, like, if you eating fruit that ain't got no seeds in it, there's a lesser nutritional value there. You know what I'm saying? It takes a little bit more work to navigate the seed, but if you want to have that joint continue, and now our kids are like, whenever I get seeded watermelon, they're like, yo, we want to plant the seeds in the yard. I don't know if no watermelon finna grow. My grandma and them used to grow watermelon. I need to tap back in. But, like, just the option that my children can see, like, I want to plant them. There's value here in this seed. There's value here in this root, right? And that's what we have to return to.
And them seeing the context. And then I want to talk about the baristas that went with us.
Right.
But them seeing a context that even we don't see. Like, I learned so much from my children in that they can see the value of, so they see a seed and yeah. they see what can come from that
yeah.
and they contextualize it at school with somebody who, you know, might have been bullying them, which I hate using that word, okay?
Yeah.
But, like, there was a situation, but to hear from one of my son's teacher that he, like, actually reconciled, one of our sons, I'm sorry, I said that, like, that
that's one. That's cool, I feel you. You did most of the work, so.
My bad. Yeah. But to
my part
hear,
was easy, you know what I'm saying? So.
Oh, okay, yeah. Thanks so much. But to hear from his teacher.
You know what I'm saying?
To hear from his teacher that he's the one that reconciled that relationship.
Come on, yeah.
And to know that he understands the value of a person.
And his name, right? Again, going back to name, his name is Freeman.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Which, first of all, he is free, but his role is also to free others.
He's the liberator. Like, you know what I'm saying? God, remember when God showed me that, like, a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Where God showed me his name, which is funny that we're talking about this.
Yeah.
Because the three names that I got about my boys from God was teacher for Maurice, liberator for Freeman, and worshiper for their good.
Come on.
Or, like, the one who uplifts.
Yeah.
It's their good. And it's funny because it was after observations, like you just described. Like, and then, but it also aligns with their name. It's just, I don't know. It's
definitely like a man, a serendipity to it. Like, you almost are like, man, I have to walk in alignment with the plan, and it's a faith thing. So, like, to get to, because I know we're going, we can talk about the baristas. We also need to talk about, like, we still
really
in 2023.
We haven't talked about them. We, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Which way are we going?
Yeah, man. I think we just need to keep on pursuing through it. So, like, let's briefly talk about baristas. And
now real quick.
Yeah, for sure.
Lanisa Williams.
Come on. Yeah.
L.A. Barista yeah. Life L.A.
Yeah.
Zion Brown.
Yeah.
His name on Instagram is like Zion with a bunch of N's or something.
Yeah,
like.
Zion the
but
Lion.
But down
something.
In, it's not Zion the Lion. You just made that.
Make it up,
he's
man.
Down in Gainesville, Florida.
Florida man.
We got Florida man.
Florida man.
We got Phil. What's Phil's name?
Philip White.
White. Why did yep. I just blank out? He's also LA filtered, and then
mm-hmm.
Sydney,
mm-hmm.
who's here with
Barnes.
Us. Sydney Barnes.
Yeah.
And
then in addition, we also had Anthony Ragler.
And so those were the four scholarships.
Yep, yep.
And then we had Anthony Ragler.
Yep.
And Lynn Butler
Black
of
and
Black
White.
And White.
Yeah.
And then Zaire.
Yes.
Zaire.
Zaire. Yeah. It's crazy.
Zaire from A Zaire Love Joints.
Yeah.
What is it? Creative Cornbread.
Yeah.
That's my girl.
Yeah. It was an amazing group of
She's
people.
She's so ghetto.
Hey, shout out to her as well. She been going crazy with the filmmaking.
Ooh,
another amazing multi-hyphenate, so I think, too.
And humble. She's
super,
a very humble
yeah.
person. And kind of crazy. Just a little bit. We love you.
Just the right amount. So like, it was an amazing experience. Is there
yeah.
anything you want to say about the baristas before we move on to talking about the most recent events in Coffee Black?
For sure. I think, and I can try to condense it, but I just really appreciated the people that they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think the respect that they took with us on the trip, the reverence even that mm-hmm. they had in interacting with people,
mm-hmm.
The openness. I feel like everybody was open to a new experience, open to learning. Nobody was unteachable. Nobody was unteachable,
mm-hmm.
but everybody was willing to serve. And
mm-hmm.
so I appreciated that. I was very excited to be on a trip with those four people specifically.
Yeah.
It was a trip for the books,
yeah.
you know, for the history books.
It was a moment, man. It was really crazy.
Yeah.
While you were talking about that, I had an idea. Like, what if we did camo Make Coffee Black Again hats?
We're not doing camo Make Coffee Black Again.
I just feel like that'd be hard. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the Tennessee joints. Do the little.
Then it's gonna be orange. We're not doing that.
We should definitely do an orange. That'd be crazy.
Y'all
that'd
will
crazy.
Never see me
with
wear
the
that.
Orange.
Y'all
with
will
the orange like embroidery.
Neon. Y'all will never.
That,
I don't know that actually might.
That'd be hard, bro. That'd be crazy. That'd be horny, shorty. But okay, so
we're not hunters. Bro.
Yeah, hey.
I'm a hunter. You remember that for real?
Oh, that was hilarious.
I'm a hunter.
You got to slaughter the coffee. You know what I'm saying? Like the people who invented that were pastoralists. You know, so it was killing cows.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I'm saying? They was
we
out here
not.
Got the horses in the back. You know what I'm saying?
We are not.
But I think even to that point, the countryness of my grandma, who's from Alabama, and like the ruralness even of being adjacent in Memphis to like other areas was almost like a superpower the first time I went to Africa, because I knew what drinking water out of a well was like. I knew what using the restroom outside was like. I knew what having to go outside with my grandma and hold peas and pick greens. You know what I'm saying? I knew what that was like. So when we outside and they're like, hey, we finna mash the corn. We making bread from corn. And I'm like, all right, bet. You talking about hot water cornbread? And it was like, how do you know what this is? And I was like, how do you know what this is? It's a whole Spider-Man meme. Like, this wild, 8,000 miles away. Like, that part of our identity is a big
away.
Part
shout
of what allows us to reconnect to the root. But it's almost like here, you're ashamed for being too country. They say we country and it's a bad thing. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's a bar when we in the motherland. You country, that's a sign of respect. Like, oh, you actually know how to move. Like, when I was, my uncles and them was clowning me for being too city growing up. Whenever we go out to Alabama, like, it was like all that kind of hazing to get me ready to just be outside and be cool being outside and know how to move around, like, plants and know how to move around animals and, like, just how to move. Like, that was like, oh, yeah, you valid. You know what I'm saying? Here. But, like, it's almost like society is pushing Black kids and Black youth away from that.
Well,
you know?
I mean, and it makes me think, I'm a city girl, so there's no shame. Okay, I have no shame of being a city girl.
Yeah, never
been a country person.
For sure.
Don't like nothing.
But that your grandma is.
My grandma, my mama country.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, that's your root.
That's my root, absolutely. I think that's everybody's root if we here.
If we being honest, that's humanity's root.
But, you know
what I'm saying?
About on Hound Hog when they were talking about
mm-hmm.
after they started the whole practice of sharecropping
mm-hmm.
and once there was this this release of slaves, whatever the emancipation was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then they were like, we don't need y'all no more.
Yeah.
Like, and at that point, we lost ownership of land. We lost
of that the practice, name, of that identity.
The practice of being
connected to the ground.
Like horticulturalists and farmers all of those things. And so we're so disconnected to it now that anything that's black is just called urban. You know, we don't get to be rural.
That's crazy.
We don't get to be. Yeah, no, they put us here.
And that's the rad part is as soon as they took us from the ground, they then gave us false approximates to it. They gave us a bunch of sugar and cream. You know what I'm saying? They gave us processed foods. Mm-hmm. They gave us, the tenements. They gave us the bandos. They gave us, you know what I'm saying, the projects when we had farms and land. And even though that was sharecropping and that was traumatic, it's still closer to our actual inheritance. Like the actual 40 acres in a mule we were promised.
And I think I talked about this on the last podcast, but I think about when we would drive on the countryside and just see people wake up and work.
Yeah.
You just go to work.
You talking about in Africa?
In Africa, sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
You wake up and you go to work.
Yep.
And I think, where would we even do that in Memphis?
Yeah.
Like, where would we, if I woke up at your grandma's house down in Alabama.
Yeah.
And went outside, what would I do?
For sure.
Like, what the heck would I
How
do?
How do you even know what to do?
How do you know what to
but
do?
But I think that that's a part of why what we're doing is so powerful. And I think we can get into the most notable roaster piece here. Part of what we're doing is we're using coffee as a portal for people to begin the journey of reconnecting to their roots and to the ground that those roots are placed within. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then by proxy, all the other plants and practices that also occupy that space.
Mm-hmm.
And like, nobody has ever framed coffee as that, as a return to inheritance, as a right to heritage, you know what I'm saying? But that's what it is. It's a seed, you know what I'm saying? It's a way to become replanted into our grounds again. And I think that that's something that the whole world needs. Like, it's something that black people need. It's something that Africans in the diaspora need. It's something that indigenous people in the world need. It's something that, Europeans need that. Like, there's a whole identity of being like, what does it mean to really be Irish? What is it? This is crazy. They be having diaspora wars on TikTok between like Irish Americans and Irish people in Ireland, or Italian Americans and Italian people in Italy, and being like, what you can't really claim. But I think at the end of the day, we all desire to have a home. We all desire to belong. And that's what drinking your coffee black really means to me at its root, is returning to our essence and enjoying it and being at a place where we choose to voluntarily participate in honoring our own heritage and our own root. And that's what it means to drink your coffee black. It's to like not need sugar and cream, not desire it, but to identify and acknowledge that who we have been made is good enough and is worthy of being celebrated and honored.
And is our definition. Like, nobody gets to redefine.
Yeah.
Like, nobody gets going back that to naming. Place of, nobody gets that place of authority
but our creator. Like, he's the only one who gets to determine. And the people who have stewarded that can help us align when we get misaligned, can help us graft back in. But again, that's not something that another community gets to just make up and define for us. So even calling coffee a bean, I'd be harping that it's a seed. But the reason why I say that is still because I had to hold peas with my grandma. Peas grow in pods. Beans grow in pods. A seed is the pit of a fruit that contains the nutrients. And now beans are also seeds, right? But like, beans, all beans are seeds, but not all seeds are beans. If you feel me, and so like I harp on that simply because it's like, bro, it's nomenclature, and that language has power to think, to change how we think and even what we expect when we drink. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't drink a cup full of bean juice. That's weird.
Like, good deal,
lima beans. You know what I'm saying?
Thurgood did. I was making green beans. And he thought it was apple juice or something.
Yeah.
And he cried for it. I gave it to him.
Yeah. I guess pot liquor, I guess. So,
he enjoyed it. I was like,
shout out to Thurgood.
You just like your dad.
That boy Wiley.
He did it for me.
But yeah, I think that going to this whole thing of like, that's part of the reason. Part of the reason why what we did was we launched our first capital campaign after being to build our first full build out for Coffee Black HQ, Future HQ, after being acknowledged and identified as the most notable coffee roaster in the world this year. And so, like, what I'm kind of excited about, one of the things I'm excited about with this project is if we're able to raise the full amount we want to do. Total raise is $1.2 million online on WeFunded. We're raising $500,000. you know, we had our first early investment round. That junk got cleared out in 5 days to raise 100K, which is wild to me because we thought it would take about a month to get there. And so really excited.
100? How many people?
Yeah, it was like maybe 105 people or something like that. Something, 20. Yeah. Like it was wild. And this is our community. It's not like wealthy Spanish barons. You know what I'm saying? This is like people putting in $100, $200.
Sound of music, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the average investment was like $800. You know what I'm saying? So like that's crazy for our community to do this. And a lot of our friends who are raising capital and doing angel investor work are talking about how like right now it's companies with millions of dollars of VC investment that can't raise $30,000 in this industry, not outside this industry, just in this economy because of the way things are trending. But like when you have alternative economies, alternative communities, which for historically we've been villainized for our alternative economies. I'm sorry. But I just think about the ways that like black people have been villainized for all the other ways we make money of the ways because we didn't have access to traditional investment, which is part of the reason why we're doing WeFund.
But it's a model. Yeah. It's a business. But, like, it's a real business.
That model, the hustler model, doing hair model, the like chicken outside of the church,
the fish plates.
Banquet hall, the fish plates, the, you know, the other imported goods, like our community. That model, like we're choosing to invest in the same way and be like, bro, we gonna put down, I'm gonna put down something because I'm a part of this, right? And I want to be able to claim that.
And honestly, and it was that. Friends and family and social media because I don't know that we had even presented it to like our email.
Yeah, we hadn't even pitched subscribe. To any.
We
any,
didn't pitch to anybody specifically.
This was just us talking to
there
our community.
There were no public. Yeah. I guess we did a press. We did do a press.
But
press
that this was before the press though. Oh, that before the press release. Press this was the 100K happened. Boom. And so like I think that as a precedent is like, you know, it's really amazing. Now we have some HNIs, some angel investors who were like working on closing.
HNI.
High net worth individuals. These are all terms I've been learning. But we have people who are invested. Come on. Yeah, man, just growth. You know what I'm saying? Elevation. But these are people who are looking to invest outside of the WeFunder for the total raise, and we're closing those deals as well. But like the thing that's exciting to me, yeah, for sure. No, I'm moving on. That was it. Touch and move. Touch it. You know what I'm saying? But the thing I'm excited about with this is the opportunity to, when we build out the full space, if we're able to reach our full goal, I want to build like a modular supply chain where kids can play. Because one of the issues some of our community members have identified is on our side of the neighborhood, the Mitchell Heights side where the shop is, on that side, the street that the shop is on, National Street, traditionally was a redlining street. Mm-hmm. And so that means that on one side of the neighborhood, there are resources and the other side, they're not. So the side we're on, Mitchell Heights, has traditionally been the side where black people after World War II were not able to get GI Bill loans for their home. And if they did get a GI Bill, they weren't able to purchase a home on the other side. And so what that turns out to, the fruit of that root is that there are no parks on mm-hmm, the Mitchell Heights mm-hmm. side of the neighborhood. And so part of what we want to do is our space to be a home for our community. We want to have something for kids to play with. And so we want to build like this modular supply chain that also functions as a place for kids to play. But as they're playing, they're seeing like, you know, those little like shoe foam boat like product type things, but we're making, and you can see a boat, and then you can move the boat along the ocean, and you can see coffee plants. Of course, our climate is not good to produce tasty coffee, but you can see plants that you can move with, or models of a plant that's made from that shoe foam that looks like, oh, coffee is a fruit, I can see it. And then I can put the fruit in a little container on a toy boat and move the toy boat across the ocean. And then, oh, here's a picture of Memphis, and like, okay, I can see where the shop is, and like I can see, oh, there's the roastery. And on one hand, it's something for kids to play with, but on the other hand, it's like this is an opportunity for them to relearn about their roots and learn about agriculture and learn about supply chain and learn about, and actually that idea came from one of our community members too, Mr. Tony, who was like, man, let kids be able to interact with this on just a play level. You know
no,
what
that's
saying?
How children learn.
That outside of just like a paper about it or a class about it, like just let them play with it to learn how the supply chain works.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they'll be, those kids in the community will end up being in coffee or something else, but like this is an opportunity to address a felt need, but also allow them to expand horizons and reconnect back to their motherland. Like before they ever go to Africa when they grow up, they'll have been to Africa when they come to the coffee club, when they come to the Coffee Black HQ. And I'm excited about that. And I think that is just a small token of like the things that happen when you honor your root. Like this is what happens when you're honoring.
And that's
your root.
I think that's where the global notable roaster, the categories that it covered were coffee quality, work in the community, social media presence, I think was one of
marketing
the
marketing for sure.
Markers. I can't remember what the fourth. There was a fourth
one. It was like sustainability. So what have you done to address like issues within the supply chain? What innovation have you brought to the industry? And all of those things happened at the same time with Coffee Black. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's dope. It tastes. It's the best coffee you ever had in your life. It's approachable. It's sustainable. It honors
and it's not
its
approachable
root.
Because we do all this work to make it approachable.
Yeah,
approachable because the people you listening to right now
for sure.
are the same people you gonna talk to at the shop. Yeah. Are the same people
because we
gonna
really
talk
drink our coffee
church.
Black because it's like, really no sugar, no cream.
And it's a matter of centering. I think even thinking about Unapologetic and like organizations along the same line of like. Actually honoring who God made you to be and
congruency.
Being that person.
Integrity.
Always. Integrity. Like
character.
And you
over
would,
everything.
You would think those would be, you know, you would think those would be easier things
now,
to achieve,
very,
but it's
very
so
rare.
Hard for people to do.
This type of freedom is very rare.
It's very,
most
it's
of these means
very,
is very
rare.
Scared.
It's
can't
very
have a
muscle
no dairy here. I'm on a mission. It's very rare.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's it.
So, no, so I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, it's also about who do you center? Mm-hmm. Like, who do you center in your identity? I think there are so many conversations being had in coffee that center so much, so many things.
Even in this conversation, I'm tempted to center a couple haters. You know what I'm saying?
No, we're not.
And we ain't doing that.
We are not centering you. I'm so sorry.
Reclaiming my time.
Reclaiming our time. In fact, I'm going to add more time to say thank you to the people
who
invested and
who
invest
us.
On a regular basis, who come and sit at the shop and just be Teresa and
thank you
M3,
to the very rare
like,
ones. You know
Ryan,
what I'm saying?
Henderson, all of y'all, like the people who come in every day, Mac, like
for sure.
Adam.
Can I say shout out to everybody who's rocking with us before the award? Like, can we really just take a?
Can we say that slow clap? Because the white people been coming at us now. I'm like, no, I will not sacrifice my first war for you.
Yeah,
no.
But now it's like now we got motion. We been had motion, but now people can see the motion in the ocean as waves. You know what I'm saying?
Especially
so
in
like,
Memphis.
Yeah,
Memphis,
yeah.
I love Memphis.
Yeah, for sure.
I have to start this sentence off that way.
Me too.
But you gotta court Memphis so hard for Memphis.
No, you gotta like Memphis. Like, one of them cities where it's like
you gotta
be lit everywhere else, and then people
and then
like,
they be like, oh, okay.
But I think what's interesting is like. I think even that is a trauma response, right? Because we've seen, this is literally the city where Martin Luther King got killed. You know what I'm saying? So like we've been almost like trained. You think about like the Crump politics that were here for so long. You've been trained not to make noise. You've been trained almost like to ignore your own brilliance and to water down the coffee black, to throw in the hazelnut creamer, because it's like if you're doing too much, you might get, you know what I'm saying? Like it might not go well for you. And so like I think people want to almost like hold their horses before they really let their hopes go where they would like them to go. And so it's on people like you and me to be abagadas, to be adesinkes, to be people who are kind of like reclaiming our time and reclaiming our inheritance and reclaiming our imagination and the right to name our
and for ourselves,
our
though, like not in response to because we've had some really like quote unquote well known or whatever people who are just like, dang, I didn't know y'all even existed, and I'm like, yes, we did not just. Sprouted from the ground today.
Yeah,
you found
for
out
sure.
about us, and not in like a defensive way, but like we have to. Even the fact that we, when people are like, "Yeah, I'm from Memphis," you know, where Dr. King was killed. That should not be our marker of like. That shouldn't be our claim to fame as a city. Like, it's so much more here. But like, we like,
I'm
yeah,
from
Dr.
Memphis,
King.
Memphis, Tennessee, where I seen strange things. MLK, Vance, you know where they killed the King's dream. I feel like I heard that bar a million times. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But it is like in a lot
that's
of
our
ways,
claim to fame, and it's a really sad claim to fame.
It's a sad like, that is, a to being to infame, infamous.
No, it's infamy.
Yeah.
I think there's so much sadness in this city that surviving the sadness is our claim to fame.
Yeah.
No.
It's the foundation behind grit and grind. Nobody wants to grit and grind. It's that we can grind.
That's why
And I think when that happens, we end up celebrating things we shouldn't celebrate because we're not nuanced enough to say we're celebrating us getting past this in spite of it being against us.
Yep.
And you know what I'm saying?
No, yep. Absolute. Mm. Yeah. Absolute. That's why you rarely will, not rarely, you'll probably never see a Coffee Black apparel with the words grit and grind on them.
Even though the pun is there.
The pun is there, okay?
You the grind pun coffee. Is there.
Yes, we got it. You grind coffee.
It's been there for 4 years, it, and we just like,
nope. I never realized that's tough. Y'all could have went there.
We could have went there, but everybody goes there in coffee. So we're definitely not going to do that. But I think, I mean,
maybe when the Grizzlies get back to us, you know what I'm saying?
It might come back around. Yeah, but for sure. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think that's like, yeah. So anyway, all that to say, get this global award in a city that really, I do think Memphis is really fighting for its identity back. Like,
I think we're in a renaissance right now.
We're in a beautiful renaissance. And I think as we keep that push, like as we keep gritting and grinding, as we keep the grit and grind, you know, of like, because I don't even use the word hustle anymore. Like, I feel like, There's so much more. Yes, there's a hustle, but like, there's so much more to like purpose and like, because underneath hustle is like, there's a purpose for your hustle, you know? Mm. And so anyway, I just feel like getting that in Memphis is very...
It's a moment.
It's symbolic.
We're proud of it, yeah.
And it's a moment, and like, it's like, we doing it. Like, we did this for Memphis, you know? Like,
She from Memphis.
Like, I think it's very, I don't know. It makes me feel a pride in my city again.
Yeah. And if I may, it makes me feel proud to be from Tennessee. Like, to be in a state where, like, I remember when I went to college outside of Chicago at Wheaton College for undergrad. And I remember the other black people who are my homies being like, you from Tennessee? You know what I'm saying? Like, you, what? What you talking about? What'd you say? I couldn't understand what you said. You know what I'm saying? Like, you say it again. You say Cuban on Cuban. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you talking about? Merlk? What'd you say? Like, yo, like, and to think about, like, yo, that's how we talk. For sure. And we the most notable globally. What? In Memphis. In Tennessee. Like, what? Now you got to sit there and look at that. Now, and another layer, of course, is doing that and being of African descent, being melanated.
Absolutely.
Like, and seeing what that means to all the people who reached out from the motherland after the award and was like, bro, it was this Afro-descended brother in Brazil. That man was going crazy on Twitter, just so excited. I had to put the little translate, John. He was speaking in Portuguese. But he was like, he had a coffee company too. He was like, I don't even care that I wasn't one. To my knowledge, he wasn't nominated. Mm-hmm. But he was like, just seeing a black person actually win this award. And for context, the award we won is a spreadgie, right? Which we've gotten other spreadgies before. It's it's basically like the coffee Emmys, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so like, I've been in like basically what is the Coffee XXL, which is like the Sprudge 20. We got that in our first year out, and we received nominations in previous years for our podcast and social media and branding. And then we received Best Film in Coffee, which we already talked about, over the world's biggest coffee YouTuber, 2 million viewers. Shout out to Big Daddy Hoff, you know what I'm saying?
I was like, whoa.
I just want to clarify, I've never met this man, but Hoff is dope, and he taught me a lot about coffee via the internet. And so, like, I was like, bro, you know what I'm saying? And he shouted us out on his page, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, back during one Christmas.
I'm not letting you live that.
I'm just trying to speed. I'm trying to pedal past that shit. Yo, that's crazy.
immediately pause.
Shout out to James Hoffman. You know what I'm saying? But I think one of the things...
Immediately pause.
I'm the cream king. Hey, shout out Kia Shine, man. But, like, what I wanted to say was just, like, doing it in this way, like my man reached out, he was like, just seeing a black person win this award, this is the most insider of insider awards you can win in one of the most insider of insider industries, you know what I'm saying? Like, not just coffee, which is already like a niche, right? Specialty coffee, which is the top 1% of coffee sold on the planet, and then within specialty coffee, this is like the most elite, like nerdy, if you know, you know, group of people who are a part of this community, which are like coffee nerds, right? And so for us to be who we are in all of the ways, from Tennessee, from Memphis, to be like black, you know what I'm saying? To do this, for us not to have any formal training in this, and to be people who are self-taught and DIY, like for us to be in all those things, and then to be like, yo, And those are the people who not only got nominated, were the first ones to be nominated from this state, and then they won in the same year that there was the first nomination for this. And they were up again. My dad was like, I don't even know what this award means. He was like, I saw somebody from Netherlands. I saw a company from Ecuador. I saw Mumbai. I saw Tokyo. I saw Brazil. And I saw Portland. And then I see at the top of all that list, I see, yes. And shout out to everybody who was nominated. Like a bunch of amazing people. Yeah. But for that, for the community to come together and be like, one, we're nominating y'all, but two, amidst this international list, the people who are the first people from their state who like, is a combination of like middle school teachers and rappers, you know what I'm saying, and nerds from the hood.
Yeah.
And for those to be the people who are nominated, you know, my great grandfather had to navigate sharecropping, you know what I'm saying? Like, and for his descendant to be like nominated globally for reclaiming a crop from the ground that is essentially sharecropping for a lot of our cousins in the diaspora, like, that's a crazy moment in the world to just sit there and be like, that happened. Like, that happened in all the ways that it shouldn't have happened. That happened here. And we're proud of that. And I think in a lot of ways, I've had to adjust and be like, I get why people are so excited now. I was talking to my pops again. He was like, bro, you had to prove yourself. You know what I'm saying? And in a lot of ways, I'm like, Dad, I did already. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a Nabagada. That's what, I don't know what else, but like, okay, cool, you are, but like, what does that mean? What does that look like? What does that do? What are the benefits of that to the world or to one who embraces that? And I think that that's what our community is kind of like at the crossroad of deciding right now. Even strangely enough, seeing like Meek Mill and how he's responded to the allegations with the court case that came out in association with Diddy, like his, I heard when somebody say like, bro, are you an activist or are you a gangster? Like, you got to pick one. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think our culture is at a point right now where they're like, we're trying to see what has the biggest net positive for how we finna move, and especially for our city. Like today at the anti-gentrification coffee club, you know, one of our homies at the nonprofit next to us just had their car jacked, you know what I'm saying? And carjacking right now is going crazy in Memphis, right? And it's like thinking through, you know, what we're gonna do and what futures and possibilities we're putting in front of our youth is a moment. And so to be able to present something like being the most notable roaster, and our coffee shop is in the hood. To do it in that way is like, I just feel proud to be able to offer that. So last comments.
For me was yesterday I received 3 pictures from someone who frequents the shop, who has her own brand online with Memphis Moms Co. And she reached out earlier this month and said her daughter was interested in talking to me and interviewing me and doing a report on me for Black History Month.
How old is her daughter?
I think she's in 4th grade.
That's crazy.
And she said all the other children chose somebody who has passed on. But she wanted to do a report on me and us and what we're the movement we're doing in Memphis. And I was just like,
sheesh.
I was like, I don't even really, but I don't really even know what that means. Like, I was just left with being grateful because I'm just like,
wow.
What do you do with that when you're able to show? I showed the boys a picture of her holding the poster with their picture on it.
Mm.
And they were so proud.
Come on.
Big
out of sync energy right now. Come on, let's go.
I was like, this y'all, this us.
Yeah, this we.
And it's going to be us. You know, like, it always was. Always what you said, you got the stick. And so, like, to see that and to be able to show my children that, and then to see, like, I feel like our children, they finna grow up with like no fear. Like,
I feel sorry. Y'all got to see it.
No fear. Like, yesterday we took a walk. And Thurgood was going on his little baby thing. And our next door neighbor has a dog, Rambo, who always, he gonna bark at everybody who walk by, no matter.
Yep.
But we walked past him, Thurgood on his little paddle bike, stops. Mommy, can I pet that dog? And I said, first off, that's so cute.
Yep.
But like, you talking about putting your hands in a fence with a dog who is actively barking at you.
That's wild.
The dog literally just sat there.
Yeah, man.
Thurgood puts his hand in there and pet the dog's tail start wagging.
Yeah.
I'm like,
that's dominion.
This what I want my children to do.
Yeah, that's Edenic dominion.
That's what I want my children to do. Like, keep you tame it. Not only are you unafraid to put your hand in the cage, mm-hmm. you tame it.
Yeah.
You know, like. You
tame the beast with
it. And you don't even, it wasn't like he told the dog to shut up or
be quiet. Yeah, no, he called it and he shared his peace.
He shared his peace with it. I said, ugh. I was like, it's a sermon in here somewhere. But that's what I want to see. Like, that's what I want bestowed on the hearts and minds of people who interact with us as a company.
Yeah. May your house lack no coffee nor peace. Bunaf Nagaya Hindabina. This is the Coffee Black Podcast. Tap in with us. We finna be outside. And tap in with the investment opportunity, man. It's not gonna be here too much longer. And this is not finna be crazy, bro. Y'all keep that coffee black. We out.
Coffee stay black, just like me. Don't need no sugar, don't need no cream. Coffee stay black, just like me.